That's not it. That's not it. How many of you remember I was giving you the history of pyramidology? That's one good thing that Rutherford does in his book. And I was tracing the history so you could put it in perspective of those that have looked at the pyramid and developed its message, its divine message. The year 1859 witnessed the publication of the first book to announce that the Great Pyramid was built under divine inspiration. John Taylor published his work, The Great Pyramid, Why It Was Built and Who Built It. John Taylor's discoveries were limited to the exterior of the pyramid. Can I just dive in? Now, all this is going to do for you is put some things in perspective. There are people running out and buying books like they want to start a bookstore on pyramids. You're going to really get lost if you don't get a little guidance and know the perceptual sets and presuppositions behind the various theorists on the subject. This puts it all in perspective. John Taylor's discoveries were limited to the exterior of the pyramid, with the exception that he had theories about the coffer inside it. He was wholly unaware of the symbolism of the passages or any chronological significance or the symbolism pertaining to Christ. That discovery goes to Robert Menzies of Edinburgh. But Taylor preceded him by coming to the conclusion that the pyramid was designed and built under divine inspiration. But it was Menzies who saw that the passages had a prophetic plan. 2 months before his death, Taylor expressed the wish he could find someone dependable to go to Egypt and at the pyramid itself to test the figures he had used in his writings. He was very particular about accuracy. And in a letter he wrote to his intimate friend, Professor C. Piazzi Smith in Edinburgh, he pled for the cause of truth and accuracy in research about it. Professor Smith determined without delay to prepare to go to Egypt. He produced a lifetime work, 3 volumes, Life and Work at the Great Pyramid. And it was Professor Smith who discovered the pyramid stood at the center of the land surface of the earth, and that the star in alignment with the scored lines with the star in the descending passage was Alcyone in the Pleiades and Thuban or Subtle in Draconis. He was the Astronomer Royal for Scotland from 1845 to 1888. I want you to get it in your head. These are not all a bunch of dummies who did this. Now, we can approach it with a wealth of scholarship behind. I already read to you in the Marathon Pyramid session the original break-in by the Arabs in search of gold and the subsequent initial work measuring and uncovering the nature of the pyramid and its construction. An equal wealth of research and work went into what now I can pour out or you can pick up in bookstores, but they were hard in coming. Lots of research. Now, these were scholars of renown with solid historic Christian faith in many cases. Now, as I so often say, we have to find the baby that's been thrown out with the bathwater. An equal amount of effort and research needs to go into assembling the truth in many of these other areas we're exploring. Significantly, the ability to do this bursts on the scene with the turn of the 19th century. And we have hinted at that many, many times, why so many things happened in the mid-1800s. Smith, as I've said, Astronomer Royal from Scotland from 1845 to 1888. This is Adam Rutherford, probably the most thorough and complete modern book on pyramidology, four of them. But again, he makes the mistake. Most of what Capt writes draws upon the pyramidology researches of Rutherford. He too makes the mistake of getting hooked on a theory, namely that the end of the world is going to come in 1979 and the millennium will be ushered in. And the result is that that private theory of his that is not at all required or demanded by the pyramid itself causes him to fall into discredit, and once more the most profound and complete and thorough study of the pyramid will suffer from overkill, and that gross error that is not at all required by the pyramid was an interpretive principle that when he got on it, he made the mistake of others. Preceding him in the 1920s was Davison. He made the same mistake, picking a date that the world would end. Now, people have been doing that with the Bible for years. You know that, don't you? We don't throw the Bible out because somebody made an error in interpreting it. It still remains the challenge to separate the truth that's there from the interpretive connections that are made by men seeking to overkill. The Old Testament contained the truths about Christ's first coming, and the best scholars of the Hebrew faith let their own preferences so blind them that they couldn't recognize Christ when he came. That's an old weakness. But don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's my job and others. Now, Capt, in his book, this was written originally. Let's see what the date is on it originally. Copyright 71. Well, out of respect for the massive scholarship, he's influenced by Rutherford, and in the 89, or page 89, he says, the uncertainty is the time measurements from 1914 forward. In all the measurements prior to 1914, the chronological scale is one pyramid inch per year. At the messianic angle of 28 degrees, 18 minutes, 9.7 seconds. Hindsight has proven the accuracy of this scale to Bible chronology. However, the passage beyond the great step lies on the horizontal, not the messianic angle. You that have the diagrams in the book you haven't got yet can see that. As you come to the great step, and you're measuring along the floor, you suddenly start walking horizontal. Does the scale change? Up to that point, an inch to a year has worked out perfectly. Now we go horizontal. He says, that makes uncertain. The 1979 date, he says, which seems to fit, was suggested by the late Dr. Adam Rutherford, using his scale. Rutherford found the limestone floor of the horizontal passage ended at a point 65 inches where the floor changed to red granite. Time will prove if this scale and the change of the floor stone does mark the end of this age and the beginning of the next. Capt, I think instinctively as a scholar, recognized Rutherford might be wrong. The exact date of the end of this present age may be a little further into the future than we anticipate. Capt would be awfully embarrassed if he hadn't said that. Rutherford picks one date. Each of them make mistakes. And it's our job to mine out of each until you can be steered, if you continue the study, steered down the paths where you recognize when somebody's building on a shaky premise and when it's solid. Now, each of these men had weak areas in their research, but there were some solid contributions. Smith was highly skilled in photography. It's his photographs that enable people that had never been to the pyramid to begin to work with. It's easy to go now, get on jet. But in those days, it was quite a trip. It was while Professor Smith was actually at the Great Pyramid that it was revealed to Robert Menzies, the young Scottish shipbuilder in Edinburgh, during February 1865, that the burst-open upper mouth of the well shaft represented the death and resurrection of Christ, and that the various passages represented the respective ages, and that those passages were constructed according to a chronological scale of a geometric inch to a year. That's saying a little more complicated, that Menzies came up with the idea of God's prophetic plan being in there. Now, this well shaft, if you can get the camera on it, the well shaft, you remember, we traced the guy who went down that shaft, a couple of them, breaks open right here into the ascending passage at that point to symbolize the resurrection and return of Christ from the grave. Each man put a piece in the fabric of the pyramid. The circulation of Smith's books sparked off many pamphlets. Among the first was a small publication in 69 by Joseph Seiss, an American minister in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, A Miracle in Stone. He held the theory that on the 100th course of masonry, four above the King's Chamber, there was an undiscovered chamber representing heaven. And he showed this chamber on his diagram of the pyramid's passages and chambers at the front of the book. He fell into disrepute because he projected that theory that didn't have any substance in fact. And we have the researchers at Stanford firing their radio beams trying to find passages for a different reason, but they haven't found any yet. You say, are you sure there aren't any there? No, I'm not. Might be. Computers can't analyze the data, it seems. Something funny about the pyramid. But you have to learn, and right now you can go to religious bookstores and buy Seiss's book. Unless you look at the date, he's dated back to 1869. Many things happened since then. In 1870, many other papers came out. John Vincent Day, Papers on the Great Pyramid, Commander Tracy, The Pillar of Witness, A Scriptural View of the Great Pyramid, Ralston Skinner, Charles Casey, all kinds of people got involved in it in the 1870s, but it was not until 1891 another work really made a big impact. This was The Corroborative Testimony of God's Stone Witness and the Prophet, the Great Pyramid in Egypt, by Charles T. Russell, who incorporated it as a final section in his book, Thy Kingdom Come. These are not Jehovah's Witness people, by the way. Rutherford and Russell are different than the Rutherfords and Russells of the Jehovah's Witness. It reached a circulation of 2 million. Popularity for the pyramid was like the way people are listening to me on the subject. It was Russell who solved the mystery of the Great Pyramid's two principal chambers. Now, he solved the mystery in the view of Rutherford because Rutherford adopted Russell's view. Russell took the viewpoint that the King's Chamber symbolized the destiny of the overcoming saints who have part in the first resurrection and sit with Christ on His throne, while the Queen's Chamber, let's look at those chambers again. You got that thing you can bring out here, Joe? The one that Sammy shook down last night? Those are better pictures of, you can just lean it against the wall there. But in the meantime, as you go up the ascending passage of the pyramid, the first horizontal passage leads you to a room called the Queen's Chamber. The second horizontal passage leads you to a room called the King's Chamber. The larger painting will show it better. There, over to the left, Joe, you have, or rather, Peter, you have larger scale models of the King's Chamber and the Queen's Chamber. Get a picture. Let me watch the monitor. That's the Queen's Chamber. Above it's the King's Chamber. Now zoom over to the big picture so we can see them in relationship to each other. There's your horizontal passages. To you that listen on radio, a certain number of inches up the first ascending passage, and you'll have your book. We're working to get them out this week. Just before the Grand Gallery opens up, or at the same point of intersection, a horizontal passage takes off into the Queen's Chamber. Then at the upper end of the Grand Gallery, a horizontal passage takes off into the King's Chamber. Now, what are these two horizontal passages to signify? Russell, 1891, the turn of this century, revealed that the King's Chamber symbolizes the destiny of the overcoming saints. Now see, one of the things I quarrel with about Rutherford is that when he has somebody saying what he agrees with, he calls it revelation. Now, only the pyramid's going to reveal anything. Come around here. Can't see anybody over there. Get that thing rolling up and down. There you go. If it's something he agrees with, it's revelation. Charles D. Russell, if he's right, didn't reveal anything. All he did was discover what the pyramid revealed and interpret the facts of the pyramid. Learn to distinguish between interpretation and fact. There are only so many inches between certain points. And horizontal is horizontal and angle is angle. Now, why are some horizontal? Every pyramidologist begins to see eventually that a different scale applies on the horizontal than on the angle. What is it? Well, according to Rutherford, Russell had revealed to him the King's Chamber symbolizes the destiny of the overcoming saints who have part in the first resurrection and sit with Christ on His throne, while the Queen's Chamber represents the destiny of humanity through the regeneration of Israel and the world in the general resurrection. Now that may be true. Maybe on that thing, I want to look at it for a minute. That picture you just had. It could easily mean that when you turn sideways through that Queen's Chamber, you have not moved into the Grand Gallery where you take advantage of the life of faith and the life of Christ's resurrection and move on toward the King's Chamber. Therefore, if you take Russell's view, you're only dealing with the Christians when you go on up through the Grand Gallery. Because the horizontal passage to the Queen's Chamber is the destiny of humanity through the regeneration of Israel and the world and the general resurrection. Therefore, you're going to find these people that take Russell's view are going to fight like tigers against the viewpoint that sees the horizontal passage as an inch for a month instead of an inch for a year when it goes horizontal. And there's no way that the suppressed passages go to the King's Chamber. Zoom in on that same picture if you can, Peter. Stop right there. That first territory where you have to stoop to walk on the horizontal below that first lowered section, Right there. Wish I had an arrow pointer I could point all the way over there with. Now, if you'll notice, there's two colors in that king's chamber. The striped area represents a different kind of stone. So if you look closely, and it's hard to hold that hand camera, but you notice as you... You nervous, Peter? Your knee's slipping. You got it now? Put it on him, Joe. Let him wiggle. The man's got life. He's not dead. Let him move. Now, see, that first section you'd have to stoop to walk under. Under the inch to a month theory on the horizontal scale, that's perfectly coincides with the First World War. The second lower section you have to stoop to walk under perfectly coincides with the Great Depression. Then you come into the King's Chamber. The only problem is you come in to the left of it. The King's Chamber, if you look vertically from the apex of the pyramid downward, the coffin, so-called, the coffer, better word, is not centrally aligned. Come on back here if you can, Peter. Or maybe this one can pick it up. Stay where you're at, Peter. I got enough cameras, I can work it. Now, look at Peter's picture first, and let me guide you. That's a slice-through cross-section. North would be on the right of your screen, and south would be on the left of your screen. And if you walked up the passageway, you'd have to stoop to go under that first little low section. Then you could stand up a bit in what's called the anteroom there. Then you'd have to stoop again to go under the second section, which to the inch to a month people on the horizontal scale is the Great Depression. Then you can stand up in the King's Chamber. But you're not standing by that thing on the floor which is the coffer. You've got to turn right to get to it, because look at this picture now. As you walk in through that from north to south and stand in that place that's the King's Chamber, you've got to turn right to get to the coffer, which is over here, because the whole passageway, as you go in on the north side of the pyramid, was displaced. It was not properly lined up. The builder displaced it a certain number of inches to one side of center. So that whole passageway, I'm looking for a picture that will show that, the whole passageway is missing the center slice of the pyramid by a fixed number of inches. That's a displacement from the original plan of the architect. Man's error going out the gate, which is sin, which can only be corrected by God that brings us back to His center. If Cap left that out of this book, I need to print a stick-on diagram and stick it in to this book. Can you wait till I find it? I don't want you to see this, and I'm in no hurry. I want to have the gestalt come to you till you can understand the pyramid. Now, if you look at the pyramid cross-section, give me this camera, you go in at the north side, the descending passage, then the ascending passage goes up, then it horizontal into the Queen's Chamber and into the King's Chamber. This is the north side where you enter. But that, if we could turn the book around like that, the passageway is to the left. We're entering on the north side, going south. And we got to turn west to get to the coffer once we get in the King's Chamber. There, up in the upper right corner, it's designed. Also on yours, Peter, you got it. As you go in, you got to turn right. But the picture I'm looking for is a sliced down overhead look. Oh, good, you're helping me. Oh, that's so, yeah. That's so little, I'm not sure we can pick it up. But come over here with your camera, Peter, if you will, please. And the fact my Voices of Faith found it shows you these diagrams are in the book. This one could be a bit more pronounced. It's a cutaway from the top of the pyramid. Here is the entrance going in, and I'm not sure this camera will pick up the fact that the center of the pyramid, coming down like this, cuts through the king's chamber considerably to the right of the passageway. Let me get my pencil, Peter. Now let's try it again. The center line of the pyramid cuts through the king's chamber considerably to the right of the passageway, which is running, as you can see here, to the left of the center line. The minute the passageways came in, now you will find that displacement factor, I haven't yet gotten to Davison, was the major thing that he discovered. And it's the displacement of that fixed number of inches throughout the pyramid that builds an error in, that the builders deviated. In my judgment, because it was God's master plan, he in essence built the error in to teach the truth of the displacement that forced the cornerstone at the top to not fit. And you only get back center when you head back toward the coffer, which symbolizes Messiah, the whole destiny of the pyramid as of Scripture. And we're back on the center line, and the head of the corner that was rejected can become the head cornerstone. Now, if we can go back, Peter, to those over there, get yourself a chair to sit on if it helps. Russell's position was that the Queen's Chamber represents the destiny of humanity through the regeneration of Israel and the world and the general resurrection. The Grand Gallery is the Christian dispensation and the high calling of the select few in God. Now, whatever book you buy, if you're not warned in advance, you won't know whether it comes out of the stream of Russell's viewpoint. And there's something that researchers learn, that a man will fight much harder for something after he said it than he would for the same thing if he hadn't said it. The art of research is don't commit yourself too soon. That's why I dangle you like I do. I'm a PhD is a research degree. You have to learn to recognize who was the mentor of those who interpret the pyramid. There's nothing in the pyramid that says. Nowhere does it say the Queen's Chamber and that horizontal passage is regeneration of Israel, which is the tribes and the world and the general resurrection. But those that go through the Grand Gallery represent the Christians only. Now, there's solid bases for their interpretation, but it's not required. Let me keep going. You got that little point? Show you it's not Jehovah's Witness. I'll tell you what Jehovah's Witness think of the pyramid. Judge Rutherford, the founder of the Jehovah's Witness sect, says, "It is certain that the pyramid of Giza was not built by Jehovah God, nor was it built at his command. The devil himself superintended the building of the pyramid of Giza." That's in the Watchtower, November 15, 1928. The next pyramidologist was Professor Charles Lagrange, astronomer at the Royal Observatory, Brussels, Belgium. To Professor Lagrange belongs the honor of being the discoverer of the displacement factor and the structure of the Great Pyramid. Subsequent study on this matter through the years revealed that this discovery was of far greater importance than Professor Lagrange himself realized. 1903, James Rutherford, the father of the author, takes off, and he gives a great tribute to his father, for which I admire him very much. The next pyramidologist, by the way, I remember I gave you the cute story of the author himself being turned on by his father when he was 9 years old, drawing a chart of the Great Pyramid and taking it to school and teaching his teacher about it when he was nine. Colonel Garnier, in 1905, This was the first book in the 20th century. To Garnier, a significant contribution was to find out that the beginning of the Grand Gallery, can you find that spot where the Grand Gallery starts? That the beginning of the Grand Gallery, where it suddenly moves to a high, tall passage from the lower passage, for years up until Garnier, that was considered to be the point of the birth of Christ. Now, there's only so many inches between points. So they had to zig and zag and find imaginary points between ceiling and wall to make it come out. Furthermore, they had incorporated an error from the beginning. They had the benchmark of the two lines that intersect, if you can find that, Peter, where the scored lines intersect and Draconis and Pleiades line up. They had dated it 1841 B.C., and we're off 3 years. Modern astronomy corrected it. They weren't at fault. But what happened is, when you were 3 years off, the inches came so close to these dates, they knew they were on something, but because their starting point was wrong, they'd bend the dates a little and zig and zag the lines and come up with funny geometric theories. It's like any kind of research. The facts are so close that their proximity cannot be an accident. How could you be that close on a whole series of dates, and the fact they were only 2 or 3 years off, they couldn't correct their benchmark. They didn't have the astronomical factors worked out that well yet. So they knew they were so close it had to be something, and then they'd force it. That caused the baby to be thrown out the bathwater, because he incorporated a little error at the outset. Remember when I preached on Sunday morning, the arguments about the four different starting points of Daniel's 70 weeks, nobody taking the trouble to calculate it on 30-day months? Simple little facts like safety pin. Well, Garnier proved that they were off on one thing. Instead of that point where the Grand Gallery takes off, find that again, Peter, being the birth of Christ, Garnier showed both the symbolism and chronological measurement that it represented not the birth of Christ, but the death of Christ. Now you've got a few years, 30-some years, you've got to work out. Measuring tapes had to be pulled out again. Now, because, remember this, everybody was assuming that Christ was born about 4 B.C. That dominated church and historical thinking for centuries, and it was based upon an erroneous calculation regarding the death of Herod that was picked up in the writings of Josephus, and modern research has totally blown that apart. And that was progress, because they figured out he wasn't born 0 A.D. Now modern science has pinned down he was born 2 B.C., and the error of Herod's death straightened out. We've been on that. I spent a whole lesson on it. Furthermore, for years, you'd get Inquisition and put you on a rack and tear you apart if you tried to say Jesus wasn't born on December 25th. Despite the fact that was Mithra's birth, and Mithraism had celebrated it for years, now the church is gaining the courage to finally face up to the fact he was born in the fall. And you don't even have to go out of Scripture to relate his birth to the birth of John the Baptist and the courses of the temple service to know he was born in the fall. So you push to September. So what was obviously seen by the overeager first lookers into the pyramid, but had some adjustment factors, is like archaeology. The more you find out, the more it confirms the Scripture. The more the various sciences play on the pyramid, the more the gray areas, flexible areas, have to adjust areas, suddenly dissolve, and it comes out right on target. They were dealing with things, you know, is bad enough to go down and say God put his prophetic plan in the pyramid. If in the same breath you take on the whole church world and say the pyramid shows Christ was born 2 B.C. when everybody has already decided it's December 25th, 4 B.C., you're dead before you go out of the saddle. So you got to try to scrape the stone and angle the measurements, make him be born 4 B.C. And he's crucified 33 A.D. and a half. A lot of people thought he was crucified a different date. There is a whole school within the church that believes that Jesus came to preach the acceptable year of the Lord. And to them, a year is a year. Professor Totten has written books to prove that Jesus did not have 3.5 years ministry, he only had one. The acceptable year of the Lord. He opened Isaiah, says, this day is going to be fulfilled. It came to preach the acceptable year of the Lord. Well, if that's the case, then you got real problems. When you are confronting religious tradition, there is no war as hot as a holy war. But as you look at the whole perspective, the pyramid continues to come out right. Now, to conclude that the rise of the Grand Gallery, it makes sense, doesn't it, if the Grand Gallery opens up. And by the way, I want you to know something. Look at that number of the height of the Grand Gallery where it opens. Zoom in on that picture. How many feet is that? Inches. 286.1 pyramid inches. As you come out of the stoop chamber and the Grand Gallery, which is the gallery in the old pyramid Book of the Dead, the old Egyptian Book of the Dead, called the gallery or path of truth and light. Notice the dotted line and the arrow. The gallery is not 286.1 pyramid inches high. It is 286.1 pyramid inches higher than the first passage. Notice the arrow between the dotted line and the ceiling. The difference is an added space. If it had stayed the same size, the dotted line would continue. But suddenly it opens up 286.1 pyramid inches. What is that 286.1 pyramid inches? Take Cap's book and go to page 41. And see if you can get in here with the other camera behind me. Close enough. I'm not sure you can. Remember this picture? The passageway is to the left of center of the pyramid, right? Isn't that what we said? Do you know how much left it is? 286.1 pyramid inches. So the displacement factor to the left, the minute you enter the Grand Gallery, that space is compensated upward. Get that picture again. Now, a little bit of logic will tell you that the compensation for man's error, sin, did not occur at the birth of Christ. He was under law. He perfectly fulfilled the law, which is the stricture of the first passage. It's man moving forward from the Exodus when law came to the death and resurrection of Christ. And as he compensated, having kept the law and been under law from his youth upward, as he compensated for man's sin, his resurrection bursts open the Grand Gallery. We can walk into a dimension that has removed that displacement error. No longer under law, pressed down under law. Now, there's a very interesting little triangle. I wonder if I can find that. The Christ triangle. Very interesting. I wonder if I can find it. It's 10:30. Is this helping you understand it any? Now, Garnier, let me finish this sentence. discovered it was not the birth but the death of our Lord that opened up the displacement. His problem was he accepted the date the tradition gave, A.D. 31 for the crucifixion. Now, why would they have A.D. 31 for the crucifixion? Scripture says he was about 30 years of age when he was baptized and entered his ministry. Tradition with some solid scriptural basis says he ministered 3.5 years. If he was born 4 B.C. and was crucified when he was 33.5, he was crucified just 430 A.D. Garnier apparently accepted the date of 2 B.C., but he had it fixed. He could not change the date. He had him crucified A.D. 31. Some of these men had already fixed their position and written books and couldn't change without losing face regarding historicism and prophecy, and they had Daniel's weeks to deal with, and so they'd already fixed some of those dates, and they couldn't change them. So he discovered a basic truth, but he had to meddle with the inches again, that the opening up would come at the crucifixion and resurrection of Christ, where he set us free from the yoke of the law that kept us bent over and stooped, walking up that first ascending pass under the yoke of the law, and suddenly the displacement is compensated for. Man's sin has been paid for. So it became clear. Furthermore, the burst open well. Go back to that picture, Peter. Just got to get ironclad knees. If you'll see the dotted lines underneath, that's the well coming up. That picture doesn't show the well that well, because the way the well explodes, it blows open sections of the stones that are the pavement of that ascending passage. You don't just have yourself going into that passage, walking on the floor without, you know, it's not perfectly carved. I'll see if I can find a picture that shows the blown out floor. Because the blown out floor of the well is very interesting. There's no way that well was made and dug from the top down. It was dug from the bottom up, and suddenly the stones are literally blown out, exploded out, as the type of the resurrection. And the exact point where they're blown out gives you the entrance into the grand gallery and the compensation. I can't find it. You guys that know this book well, because that's the only one you're reading. I'm reading so many. I give you this one and I read others. But I'm not sure Cap's book has a close-up picture of the blown-out well.
This is the end of Side 1.